Good morning and welcome to our Sunday morning meeting. We're going to read from a larger print, but the material is on the back of the periodical. If you don't have one, please be sure to get one, as it includes our schedule for February and March. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Here in Philadelphia, we have two weekly meetings and a monthly meeting. Of course, this Sunday morning, we have a lecture or a talk or a panel on a particular aspect of the philosophy. For the month of February, our theme is Theosophy in Myth and Myths. That's hard to say. Theosophy in Myths and Allegories. Next Sunday, the title is The Value and Purpose of Myths. Then on, and of course that meeting from 11 to 12, the doors open at 10:30. On Wednesday evenings, we have a study class from 7:45 to 9. We're studying William Q. Judge's Ocean of Theosophy. We're in the subject of reincarnation and going to start chapter 10. The library, which is a reference library, not a lending library, in the front of the building is open on Wednesday nights before the class from 5:30 to 7:30. The other meeting that we have once a month is on the third Friday of the month. And our theme for this quarter is reincarnation in myth and symbol. And for Friday, February 19th, the title is The Phoenix and the Serpent. The doors open at 6:30. That meeting is from 7 to 8. Now, all our meetings, of course, are free, and everyone is welcome to attend. But all of our efforts are done by voluntary donations of time, of service, of work, and, of course, of money. If you wish to make a donation, you may do so at the book table, or there's a small box in the hall. Before this morning's talk, which is the heroic Prometheus, a reading has been selected from The Secret Doctrine. Mythology is the repository of man's most ancient science. And what concerns us chiefly is this. When truly interpreted once more, it is destined to be the death of those false theologies to which it has unwittingly given birth. In modern phraseology, a statement is sometimes said to be mythical in proportion to its being untrue. But the ancient mythology was not a system or mode of falsifying in that sense. Its fables were the means of conveying facts. They were neither forgeries nor fictions, ever ready to impart to the earnest student the secret of the ancient thought and anything that regards history concealed under mythological symbolism, and thus to furnish a few more landmarks towards a retrospective view of the past as containing useful information with regard to the origin of man, the evolution of the races. The heroic Prometheus.
We are told, pardon me, a little further in the secret doctrine, what is the absolute and complete truth, as well as the esoteric meaning about these universal myths? The whole essence of truth cannot be transmitted from mouth to ear, nor can any pen describe it, not even that of the recording angel, unless man finds the answer in the sanctuary of his own heart, in the innermost depths of his divine intuitions. So we're invited this morning, as we begin the series on myth, to listen with our minds, to discern with our hearts what are the true esoteric teachings or correspondences, perhaps, in these stories. Because remember, so many years after this myth was first put forward from mouth to ear, we continue to recognize it today. So all of the stories that have been passed from generation to generation have a purpose. If there were nothing to glean from it or learn from it, it would of its own fade away if it were just simply a bedtime story. So Theosophy tells us that these myths, these enduring symbols, are a way of reigniting that within us which seeks to know, to discern the truth, the seeds within these stories. So let's look at Prometheus that way, and there are many, many symbols that when we have time for the discussion afterwards, we can get into. Prometheus, it was said, was a member of a family of Titans, and that word we might consider as giants. We bring to mind the idea of the Atlanteans. Those who ruled the earth at the time ruled the worlds at the time were of tremendous stature. And this is a period of time where the Greek gods of Olympus were... I'm sorry, did you shake your head now? Oh, I just wanted to check, okay. The Greek gods of Olympus were about to overthrow the rule of the day and so seek dominion over all of the worlds. Now, Prometheus was the son of Titans and had three brothers. The name Prometheus means forethought. One of his brothers was Epimetheus, which means afterthought. Atlas and Manetius were his other two brothers. So even within these singular families, we see roots of these ideas going out, and some of those may pop up as we go along. So the story goes that the gods sent a flood, a great cataclysm, to overwhelm the land of the giants, Atlantis, at the same time that the Athenians began to rise in power. So there's a great shifting at this time of the balance of power, of evolution, of what will proceed. Prometheus's brother Atlas had originally aligned himself with the Egyptians and had escaped Atlantis to join others in an unsuccessful war against the Olympic gods. Now remember, Prometheus has forethought. He has already seen that this will not be a successful venture, and so decides to align himself with Zeus and the gods. In the battle, Zeus kills their brother Menoetius, but with a thunderbolt spared Atlas and condemned him to support heaven on his shoulders for all eternity, which is another whole story. So there's little seeds throughout. So Prometheus had seen the rebellion, went to Zeus's side, and joined in the battle. He had also persuaded his brother Epimetheus to do the same. Epimetheus trusted what Prometheus saw and foretold. At some point, it was said Zeus had a tremendous pain in his head, such that it was unbearable, and Prometheus went and held his aching head so that Vulcan could split it and open and release the goddess Athena. So there is a coming forth, a birth of something. There is an assist there. There is a tremendous event. To show her gratitude, Athena then taught Prometheus astronomy, science, architecture, mathematics, navigation, medicine, all of the arts, for assisting in giving birth to this new incarnation, similar to, we might imagine, the bringing forth of that knowledge into a new period of evolution. At this point, Prometheus, by forming lumps of clay into images resembling the gods, decided that it would be time to have another race come up, and Athena admired the figures and has said she breathed on them, giving life to them, the great breath and the coming forth. Zeus was not happy with any of this. He did not like the creatures, and it is said he confined them to earth and denied them immortality. Interesting. So there is a separation in his mind between the gods and those lower beings. In working the traditions and sacrificial rites of the gods, Prometheus was given the task of determining how sacrifices would be made to the gods from these new earthlings. And it was said that a bull was cut up. Now, traditionally, the fat, the meats, all of the juicy parts were to be sacrificed to the gods, and the men would then keep the bones and whatever was left over, the less desirable parts. But Zeus had taken the less desirable parts, put them in a bag, and covered them with the fat, and all of the tender parts put with bones on top in another bag, and Zeus was to choose which would be for the gods and which for the men. Well, he chose the one that appeared to be the best, and certainly was not. This was something that Zeus would not stand for. He believed that Prometheus was laughing at him for this whole condition that had happened to these young men that Prometheus loved. He had an affinity for them. Zeus did not. Zeus, in order to take revenge on Prometheus, said, "Let them eat their flesh raw. I will take fire from them." This was a tremendous point in this evolutionary plan. So at this point, Prometheus goes to Athena and says, "Please let me back into the heavens. I want to bring fire to these that I love. It's important. It's time. It's appropriate. It is now is the time. I know it." So he, with her help, snuck into the heavens, took, it says, a burning coal, wrapped it in a fennel stalk, and took it from the heavens down to earth. In doing that, it says, he lighted a torch at the fiery chariot of the sun. So the bit of that was brought down to man, giving the fire to mankind. Zeus then swore revenge. This was not his word was not to be broken. This was not appropriate in his mind. He ordered Hephaestus, forgive the Hephaestus, thank you, to fashion a woman, have the four winds breathe life into her, and all the goddesses of Olympus to adorn her. So she was to be the most beautiful, the most revered ever. And her name then was Pandora. Zeus sent her as a gift to Epimetheus, Prometheus's brother, but Prometheus had warned Epimetheus, do not accept any gifts from Zeus. They will not be given in the right way. Just deny the gift, which is what happened. This angered Zeus even more. And at the end of this series of events, Zeus ordered that Prometheus be chained naked to a pillar in the Caucasian mountains, where a vulture would tear at his liver all day with no end to the pain, and every night exposed to the cold and frost, his liver would grow whole again. This was his punishment for stealing the fire and giving it to man. Epimetheus, so alarmed at this fate that his brother was now enduring and not wishing to incur the wrath of Zeus on himself, married Pandora. What they didn't know was that Pandora was given a box holding all of the spites, is the way it's described, all of the plagues, all of the sicknesses, insanities, passions, vices, everything that could be the downfall of mankind. And it was said that that box was never to be opened. However, of course, it was opened. And Zeus's revenge then, it is saying, was taken out on mankind. What neither of them knew was Prometheus had fashioned a box where he captured hope and also allowed that to be given to mankind, so that as they would suffer, there was forever the hope that was the equaling, the balancing point. Years after, it is said that Heracles, who we might call Hercules, talked to Zeus and got permission to free Prometheus from his bindings to the rock. So there is this tremendous story that evolves from many different angles. Prometheus, we'll just bring up some of the symbols and perhaps we can talk about them together. Prometheus stealing the divine fire. The divine fire. The fire itself, the rock, the vulture. It is said in the secret doctrine, Prometheus represents the divine aspect, becoming man, be-ness, becoming being. And we can talk about that further. Prometheus fashioning mankind from lumps of clay. Interesting. And if we think about what we know about the evolution of man, pardon me, in the early periods, what that could represent. Prometheus, it is said, is the archetype of humanity, the regenerator, the rising as the phoenix from the ashes, the round beginning again, taking shape. And finally, again from the secret doctrine, on the idea of punishment, we looked that up. Everywhere it is the same. The creating powers produce man, but fail in their final object. All these logoi strive to endow man with conscious, immortal spirit, reflected in the mind, or manas, alone. They fail, and they are all represented as being punished for the failure, if not for the attempt. What is the nature of the punishment? A sentence of imprisonment in the lower or nether region, which is our earth, the lowest in its chain for an eternity, in quotes, meaning the duration of the life cycle, in the darkness of matter or within animal man. So we have some very rich symbolism to discuss this morning.
Splitting open of the head, can that be a pen to the right upper hand?
we certainly think it's pointing towards that, the splitting open of the head. We think the one of the main features of the story is the lighting up of Manus, that there is coming forth something new, which it speaks about the time being appropriate for all of this to happen. So the lighting up of Manus is definitely a key feature. Yes. And if we consider that one represents the lowest attributes, we might say, and one the highest, it can also be looked at as the representation of the duality, that there is the lower regions, the regions of the animal man, and the higher regions of the spiritual man, who up till that point had not been awakened yet. So there's many, many references. Yes. So let's compare the two. That's an interesting correspondence there. Pandora's box and the apple that Eve is tempted to bite. The opposing balancing force for Eve would be the same thing. The mind becomes lit up. It is said that what was eaten of was the fruit of knowledge, the tree of knowledge. So in both instances, there is the temptation of the lower, the animal nature, and the ability to cling to the higher, whether in the one case it was hope, or in the other case, the knowledge that we now have free will to choose from that point forward. Yes. They will be as us, exactly. Right. And if we look within those, isn't there always that point? The gods don't want the mortals to be as they are, but there is always the balancing to that. In this case, there was Prometheus who said, yes, they deserve this divine fire. In the case of the Bible, Jesus came and said, not only am I as you are, but greater things than I have done you will do. So the root or the truth of the stories is there. How we interpret it and mix the symbols and the ideologies is our task, I guess. But if we look within, we think there is always the balancing of that. Your hand was up. Sure. So we're going to the evolutionary path of man. Theosophy says that everything comes forth gradually. Nothing happens in leaps and bounds. Nature proceeds very slowly, and in the very beginning there is this divine source, this causeless cause, or this rootless root with no beginning, no ending, and that periodically the time is appropriate for it to be called forth again. So there are periods of rest and periods of activity. It was mentioned here, one of the allegories of this beginning of the evolutionary cycle is called the great breath, that there is a great outbreathing of emanation from this divine source, and that all are sparks and rays of that. What happens in the beginning stages is the unit of intelligence. There's a universal intelligence that is also reflected. And as that moves through lower kingdoms of development, the elemental kingdom, gaseous and fiery, we have the mineral kingdom, vegetable, animal. At some point in the evolutionary process is the time for man to come on the scene. In the story, man is fashioned out of earth, out of clay. And it is appropriate for, the vehicle is ready, the form is here, for man to take up that cycle and move forward. The Manas principle, the Sanskrit word for mind, has been, let's say, latent in the form up till this point. The animal or the plant can't choose for themselves, but instinctively knows water, knows sunlight, knows the cycle of how it should behave. At a certain point in our evolution, the mind principle is lit up. It actually says lit up, and here we have fire being given, divine fire, where mind becomes active and self-consciousness, which is what sets humans apart from the lower kingdoms, is now active. It is not completely active because we're not gods yet. We haven't reached our best potential. But at this point in evolution, mind becomes lit up. And from that point on, as was mentioned, man has free will as to what he does. Was there another point you had? Duality, right. Thank you. In the oneness that is at rest before evolution begins, there is no contrast. There is no separateness. It is a unity of spirit, of divine essence. When evolution begins is where we begin to see contrast. And the phrase is given that light and darkness are the world's eternal ways, and we actually have a wonderful quote on that. But what happens is, in physical evolution, with the ever-thickening until we get to the man with the coats of skin, there is, because we are self-conscious choosers, the lower and the higher aspect of mind. We can choose to work in the animal mind, where we are looking for nothing but what's good for ourselves, or not concerned at all with the cares of the world, or we can be as gods and do what's right, what is spiritually sound, what is ethical, and in that moment be the gods that we truly are. So if you give me one moment. Fascinating quote about light and darkness. Hope you can find it. Anyway, the gist of it was that light and darkness, or good and evil, are not two separate things. Here it is. Absolute light, and this would go to the contrast duality. Absolute light is absolute darkness, and vice versa. In fact, there is neither light nor darkness in the realms of truth. Good and evil are twins, the progeny of space and time under the sway of Maya, or illusion. Separate them by cutting off one from the other, and they will both die. Neither exists per se, since each has to be generated and created out of the other in order to come into being. Both must be known and appreciated before becoming objects of perception. Hence, in mortal mind, they must be divided. So again, we stand as the choosers in this world of duality. Do we work for the good of all, or do we work for the selfish ends of the one? Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Prometheus is the hero by the very fact of how he chooses to use the powers that he has. And Theosophy would say, spirit is crucified on the cross of matter, that the spiritual essence within, for the time, is using this vehicle, making choices, living lives, but in that process, is subject to the will of the thinker. So if we will to act as less than the best that we can be, there is suffering. There has to be. In our forum on last Saturday, we heard about karma. What we put out comes back to us. So the Buddha said life is suffering. If we forget that we are that heroic Prometheus, that highest divine spiritual within, if we choose to forget that and believe everything we see is real and this is all there is, we are in deep, deep trouble. And we will find that out sooner or later by the results of what we have done. So it is the hero's journey to live through this life of tragedy and suffering and difficulty. And then catastrophe happens, and we see the best in everyone rushing to the aid of others, regardless of cost to self. So we know both are there. It's our duty to recognize where we should act and choose the right path, because we know we can. We're aware of it, yes. And it reminds us of the point where the thinker, just before coming into incarnation, has a very clear view of the outline of the life to come and knows that whatever suffering it will endure is just, because it also recognizes the actions from the past. So we suffer from ourselves. None else compels us but ourselves. Your hand is up. Nope. Here. Temporarily. This great flood that took place, and actually Atlantis is mentioned, which we're surprised about, and understand there are probably hundreds of different tellings of the myth of Prometheus, and we tried to get as close as we could. There is some of it in the Secret Doctrine for your personal reference and study, but in this, what we found to work with, it did mention the tremendous flood that at the time was the natural order to usher in the next group of souls to begin their work. Theosophy talks about early rounds and races of men on the earth in certainly different forms than we're using now, and not making good choices. There were, it talks about, I don't know if we want to get into Atlantis, but it talks about the tremendous strides in science and intelligence and evolution that the Atlanteans made. And at the same time, we're so tempted by the flesh and the things of the terrestrial nature that they also made tremendous errors. And at some point, it was appropriate that every bit of land that they occupied and the people, the souls whose time it was to move on, came, and a great flood came. And we know that with floods and earthquakes and cataclysms, areas sink and others rise. the territory changes from lifetime to lifetime and eon to eon. So there was the appropriate time for a new beginning. And Prometheus and others recognized that this is the opportunity to, in a sense, begin again, although really it's the continuing of that line of evolution. And the forms that were molded, remember, Athena passed on, as the masters do in each new period of evolution, everything that had been learned in previous periods so that we could take that and move forward. So there is that small evolutionary stream seen in the actions of Prometheus, but first there had to be the clearing away, the balancing of the karma, the stage set for all the actions to happen that would be thereafter. Yes. Absolutely. This is Greek. The line, absolutely. Absolutely, and understand that Atlantis in its sinking and its destruction, the souls who were appropriate to move forward in evolution, there was a great settlement in Egypt, and we know about the Library of Alexandria. There was Greece, there was Rome. Understand that it's not a complete stoppage and new folks appear. As always, there are those who are fit from the work they've done to move forward and be the teachers and helpers of those who will rise up after them. So there were these great souls and these people carrying the history and the myth and all of that forward. And Greece at that time, the souls that were on the scene at one time in our history in places on the earth is absolutely tremendous. We have Plato and we have just so many amazing souls gathered in places where philosophy and education were redeemed. It was the highest for you to get into the Pythagorean school, and to do so you had to have years and years of training in mathematics and music and other things before you could even apply. So there were these thinkers on the scene at this time who were bringing forward our past and putting it forth for us to understand, let's say, that line of evolution. Must have been a tremendous time on the globe. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that hero idea has survived from time immemorial. Joseph Campbell's work on the myth of the hero is tremendous. There are so many references on that. But the reason it survives and captures our mind, we have Luke in Star Wars and all different kinds of genres. The reason it captures us and continues to capture us is because we are that hero within. we know, we hopefully have all had a moment where we've been called upon to do something that was completely beyond our capability to do. Whether it was to make a tremendous sacrifice for a loved one or someone we didn't even know, perhaps we saw some kind of a car crash and rushed to help where we would never even be able to look at it another time. We have these moments where we are these titans. And in the moment, we are tremendously lifted up. We are working from complete compassion, no matter what the suffering to ourselves. And in those moments, we are those heroes. And in the next moment, we are right back to what do I have to do now for the rest of my day. If we could hold on to those and recognize those and realize, if I'm capable of that, what more am I capable of? Even in little tiny ways, even in what we say to a friend who is suffering tremendously or what we bring to a classroom. These are our ways to be that hero. Your hand is up. Absolutely. And we don't mean to in any way belittle the experience that we all have with good and evil. In no way was that meant. There certainly is the effect that we feel as evil or the effect that we feel as good. Theosophy would simply say it is the same use of power colored, influenced, and impressed by the one using it for good or for ill. Not that they don't exist, but rather that it is truly a power that we take the reins of and direct and so are responsible for. Maybe that makes a little more sense. Some other ideas? It's okay, it's all right. Exactly. Absolutely. Do you have some thoughts? Right. Where in the story do we hear that certain ideas were implanted in humanity? We think it was Athena. Let me get our fingers correct here. Right. Thank you. It was Athena who, now remember, he assisted in the, quote, giving birth to Athena or the coming forth of that goddess. And in return for that effort, he was taught sciences, arts, mathematics, philosophy, everything that would need to be known to move forward. He was, it appears, a warrior. He was fighting with Zeus. He was using the forethought. He had this power of forethought, so it had to be developed in some period. It's not something that just springs up. But he was given the knowledge freely of all of what had been learned in previous periods, probably knowing that he was the one who would assist these coming men, and that light of fire that he brings to them is the ability for the new beings, or the new evolution of the being, to begin to understand those things. So at the beginning of every period, great period of evolution, it is said that the perfected beings share, give forth everything that is known, and that just as we have set up in our schools, those who have the knowledge share it with those seeking to learn. They move on, get a higher degree, they turn around, they teach. So it is an eternal process. And did you have any other thoughts on that? Okay. Are we okay with the good and evil? Anybody have other thoughts? Did you have a thought on that? Agreed, and theosophy, as you said, would not say that they are independent forces. Rather, that all spiritual powers and all powers are spiritual in their basis, in their root, are colorless. The power to see is simply the power to see. I can use it to build a bomb, and I can use it to plant a flower. That power has been used to influence something. It's a strange analogy, perhaps, but the power itself is affected, not affected, but influenced, let's say, or impressed by how we use it. And we never really understood the expression, love thine enemy, until we heard it differently. Hatred never ceases from hatred. Hatred only ceases from love. So that if it can be transmuted, it's not the thing of its own. It is temporarily existing as something that we are experiencing as evil, but with a change of heart and thought and condition that we put forth, it can become something good. Your hand is up. Oh, yeah. And we can only do that in a world of contrast, which is where we are with the duality. Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. It promotes separation, and that is the biggest heresy, is to believe that we are separate from one another. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Yes. So that discrimination, Theosophy might say, comes from our experience on this plane. And it is the only way we build it up. The spirit within is never affected by any of the changes it witnesses. The terrestrial man or the personal man is all the time affected by it. We know it. We change our minds. We have a different feeling about something. We get a stomach ache. Whatever the lower expression is, if there is anything out of balance where we feel it's not quite right, that's a reminder we need to get back in balance, because that is the journey. If we're working in harmony with all of these forces and all of this spiritual energy, it's the boost. If we're trying to think of a good analogy, but if we are in sync with something, think of riding a horse, if we're in sync with the rhythm of the horse, the ride is fabulous. If we're bouncing all around in opposition to the rhythm of the horse, it's going to say, what a horrible thing to ride a horse. So it's first of all our perception, to remember that we are spiritual beings working with matter to help everything move along this evolutionary stream. The suffering that we do, that comes to us, is under law. Nothing comes to us unless we put it out originally. We may not remember when. But if we can attune our minds to those thoughts, even for a small period of time, the suffering doesn't become so bad. It becomes understood. This is what needs to happen. And then we can, in that moment, act a little bit better or a little bit higher, so when the cycle is shorter return, as it will in nature and under law, it also carries that upward impulse with it. So eventually we do that enough times, we have broken that chain of suffering and created something better that will be felt by everyone and everything around us. You have your hand up? Right. Could you direct your question? And it's a wonderful study. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Okay. We'll get into that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, as to a previous question, being taught by Athena, Prometheus is given knowledge which is brought forth in every manvantara, or great period of evolution, by the wise ones who achieved levels of perfection in previous periods of evolution. This allegory points to mankind never being without a friend. So it is that wonderfully hopeful statement that there are perfected wise beings who have been where we are, and probably in natural law will go further, but are always ready to assist us. So it's the reminder that as we struggle with these thoughts and our ethics and how we should act and what the effect would be, it is for the moment to think, what could be the highest I could do in this situation? What comes to me is my duty. That's the first point. I recognize it and know that it is right to act within it, and then to discern what would be the highest that I could do here. And that statement we have to repeat because it's so effective as hatred never ceases from more hatred. Hatred is overcome by love. And boy, if the world could hear that and take a hold of that, what a different world we would be in. But remember also in this evolutionary round, we will get to that point at some time. We began from spirit. We return to spirit with all the experience gained, and then that oneness has its rest and comes forth again. Some of the other symbols. The fire was the fuel for man's thoughts. What direction they would take would strictly be the responsibility of the man from that time forward. So Prometheus, in giving this gift and helping to light up that mind, also understood, again, that free will, the self-conscious being, then employs free will and chooses to act for good or for evil at any given time. The vulture, I thought this was interesting, the vulture represents doubts and passions picking away at us day after day when we are not acting along the right lines of evolution, when we are consumed in selfish actions and thoughts. And the liver, of course, takes all of the dross of the body and purifies it and so forth. So just some thoughts. Prometheus going against the will of Zeus in helping mankind demonstrates the use, as we said, of free will now available to developing mind since man has been lit up, since that mind has been lit up. The rock Prometheus was chained to represents matter, our being bound to ignorance by the physical body. We come in with the knowledge gained from previous periods, but that mind has to be struggled with, that fire has to be lit and recognized from within, that I have reaped everything I have sown, that I am here for a purpose, that I have the free will and ability to act as I see fit, and the highest I can make that has tremendous effect on the world around me. Yes. Absolutely. For sure, absolutely, yes, just half a minute. Yeah, and they are always, as friends to us, looking for friends to help them. The work has to be done on this plane. The masters are behind the scenes, helping to fuel the effort where they can, but they cannot interrupt our karma. So just real quickly from Shelley's Prometheus Unbound. To suffer woes which hope thinks infinite, to forgive wrongs darker than death or night, to defy power which seems omnipotent, to love and bear, to hope till hope creates from its own wreck the thing it contemplates, neither to change nor falter nor repent. This, like thy glory, Titan, is to be good, great, joyous, beautiful, and free. This is alone life, joy, empire, and victory. Being adjourned.